It's Philosophy Talk.
Every nation now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists.
When we say somebody's a terrorist, we mean a number of different things. We mean the person who strapped on the bomb and went and blew himself up, or we mean the person who told him to go do that, or we mean the person who raised money for the terrorist organization, or the one who does their publicity, who does their video operations.
Are terrorists just ordinary people driven to extremes?
There are studies that show that the people who actually blow themselves up tend to be followers rather than leaders. But that applies to a lot of people in the world.
Is there a single profile of a terrorist?
What the terrorist, quote unquote, does is many different things. So why would there be a single personality for many different roles?
Our guest is Martha Crenshaw, author of Explaining Terrorism, Causes, Processes, and Consequences.
Anatomy of a Terrorist.
Coming up on Philosophy Talk. This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the Mars Theater in Berkeley, the Bay Area's breeding ground for new performance.
Our thinking originates across the bay at Stanford University. That's where I taught philosophy for many years, and Ken, who's much younger, still does.
Welcome, everyone, to Philosophy Talk. Well, today, we're looking at the anatomy of a terrorist.
Well, Ken, there's an old saying, one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter. So exactly what do we mean? How do we spot a terrorist?
Well, you know, John, that old saying actually suggests to me that the words terrorist and terrorism, they're what philosophers call contested terms. Aren't these words so entangled in rhetoric and polemics and emotion that they're just philosophically useless, frankly?
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I think we can shape them into something useful. The key for defining terrorists is the root word terror. Terrorists are people who spread terror, and we particularly have in mind spreading terror by injuring and killing people, often lots of people, especially innocent people.
Oh, yeah, but what's the difference then between a terrorist and just a garden variety mass murderer by that definition?
Well, the terrorists we have in mind aren't in it for the thrill of it. They aim to cause fear and intimidation as a way of achieving a political goal.
Okay, but freedom fighters sometimes do that. Even some governments do. So I don't think your definition really helps us with our original problem.
No, I think you're wrong. I think that feature is a feature. It's not a bug. It's not a defect in the definition. Because terrorism and terrorists come in many flavors. Terrorism is a technique, and the cause for which it's a technique for promoting can be quite different. Take World War II, for example. That was a veritable cornucopia of terrorism. You had Franco, Stalin, and Hitler terrorizing their own populations. Resistance movements were happy to use terrorist techniques to fight the Nazis. And lots of states, the Allies, the so-called good guys, used terror bombing against cities and civilians.
Yeah, okay, I take your point. But you know, John, that's all ancient history. When Americans think about terrorists these days, we're thinking about people like the Boston Marathon bombers, or Osama bin Laden and the 9/11 hijackers he inspired, or suicide bombers in the Middle East. Let's focus on those kind of terrorists.
Well, fair enough. But Americans tend to think of terrorists as necessarily bad guys with bad causes. But plenty of supposedly good guys with supposedly good causes have resorted to terrorism, too. I mentioned the anti-Nazis in World War II. The ANC in South Africa in its early days was up to its neck in terrorist techniques. Or take contemporary eco-terrorists who are out to save the world, a reasonably good cause.
You're not denying that terrorism is an intrinsically bad thing, are you?
Well, maybe. I mean, it's just not so simple to evaluate either the morality or the rationality of the technique, terrorism, once you realize that sometimes good guys with good causes resort to it, too.
Ah, John, but sane rational people with a decent moral sense? They don't engage in terrorism, except maybe as an absolute last resort.
Well, take the 9/11 hijackers. It would be very convenient if we could just dismiss them as crazy. But in fact, most of them were well-educated adults who, prior to their terrorist acts, functioned relatively normally in society. No one identified them as nutcases before the fact. They don't seem to have been mere irrational pawns, and they certainly thought of themselves as doing something both moral and rational, even heroic.
Oh, come on. Do you really think, seriously, that flying those planes into those buildings can possibly be construed as a rational act of a normally functioning mind? Really?
Well, what is it for an act to be rational? What is it for you to do something rationally? It's a way of advancing your desires and goals on the assumption that your beliefs are true. So if a terrorist desires to advance a political cause, even one that we despise, and thinks that flying a plane into the World Trade Center will advance that cause, has that belief, that's his belief, then he's rational, right?
No, not at all. Because suppose you start out with some crazy beliefs and goals. Oh, maybe you believe that by strapping a bomb to your chest and blowing up lots of other people, you'll be instantly transported to heaven and you'll get to sleep with 70 virgins. Now, come on. If you start out with thinking things like that, I really don't care how calmly and coolly you reason from there and calculate costs and benefits. You're still just plain crazy, John. Irrational garbage in means irrational garbage out.
So we've identified a question. Are acts of terrorism always and inevitably motivated by crazy beliefs and desires? Or could a terrorist be acting on a reasonable assessment of the political situation in pursuit of a fairly reasonable goal?
Okay, and to help us understand whether it's reason or unreason that makes the terrorist tick, we sent our roving philosophical reporter, Caitlin Ash, to talk to a psychologist who studies the minds of terrorists. She files this report.
An Iraq War veteran walks into Fort Hood, a military post in Texas, and opens fire.
Sources confirm the shooter's name as 34-year-old Ivan Lopez. Now, we do know that he served 4 months in Iraq in 2011. We also know that he was under diagnosis for post-traumatic stress disorder.
The shooter's father said, quote, "My son could not have been in his right mind. He was not like this."
The most recent Fort Hood shooter appears to be a perfect example of disordered, disconnected.
Clark McCauley is an expert in terrorism and social psychology at Bryn Mawr College.
I am a student of man's inhumanity to man.
McCauley says lone wolf terrorists are different from those who join militant groups. The disordered and disconnected variety tend to engage in school shootings or attacks on movie theaters. That's the kind of terrorist we hear a lot about in the U.S. But there's another kind of lone wolf terrorist. Take, for example, Humam Khalil al-Balawi.
He's basically a Palestinian who feels that the Israelis have done terrible things to Palestinians. He's a physician. He's a surgeon. His specialty is children. And so he's working away in Jordan as a surgeon, working largely with children. Meantime, at night, he becomes a blogger, a fierce blogger.
Al-Balawi railed against Western powers that victimized Muslims, and he wrote admiringly of those who go and fight the West. At some point, the Jordanian intelligence found out about his radical blogging and called him into their headquarters.
This is a place from which people often do not get out very easily or entirely safe. But he's back in 2 days, apparently unharmed, and he tells his wife he's going to Pakistan.
So off he goes with the full support of the Jordanian intelligence and the CIA. They think they've turned him, that he's going to make contact with the leader of Al-Qaeda.
He pretends to work for the West, but in fact, he puts on a suicide belt and goes to the CIA base in Khost, where they're expecting great revelations from him about Zawahiri. And he blows himself up and kills basically all the high end of the CIA people that are in that base.
Here's a clip from a tape al-Balawi made right before the suicide bombing. He has a bomb strapped to him.
Look, this is for you. It's not watch. It's detonator. To kill as much as I can, inshallah. This is my dua. to kill you? To kill your partner, Jordanian partner?
Clark McCauley says al-Balawi fits a special kind of lone wolf profile, the caring compelled. I know, strange that a terrorist would be described as caring, but remember, this man was a surgeon who worked with children.
He saw children being killed and maimed, especially by IDF attacks. And when he went off to Pakistan, he worked there also with children, many of whom had been injured and maimed by explosives with Made in USA on them. And so it was his special caring, his level of caring, that pushed him to action.
McCauley believes that if al-Balawi were not forced to decide between his beliefs and betrayal, he'd still be posting rants on his blog, never straying into the field of suicide bombing. Terrorism wasn't in his DNA.
This is not a bad person. This is not somebody characterologically flawed. It's not a psychopath. It's not somebody who can't care for others. Rather, we would say this is somebody who cares so deeply that after a while, he can't avoid an opportunity thrust upon him to do something to help the cause and the victims that he cares about.
McCauley says al-Balawi embodies the dark side of empathy, of compassion. He was sensitive, maybe more than we are, and that led him to commit acts with an extreme outcome. For Philosophy Talk, I'm Caitlin Esch.